and welcome to episode 136 of Craft, Cook, Read, Repeat, a conversation about crafting food and books. I'm Monica.
And I'm Courtney.
Today is Thursday, March 14th, 2024. A big thank you to all of our listeners, both old and new. We hope this podcast will continue to be something you put on repeat. How's it going, Courtney?
It's going well. I was going to say, Happy Pi Day.
You're reading my notes. I just wanted to make sure I remembered. I do have pie dough chilling in the fridge upstairs for my traditional banana butterscotch pie that I make on Pi Day.
I am solo all day, all evening, so it might be worth buying a slice somewhere.
Very true. Very true. What would be the pie you would be looking out for?
I love an apple crumb pie would be my favorite.
That's a good one. I like it.
My husband will eat any kind, loves fruit pies. Nathan loves apple pies. Matthew is like you and prefers the chocolatey variety.
Well, I don't know if I prefer chocolate in a pie. I mean, I wouldn't
like a
turn
Boston
it away.
Cream pie, that kind of thing.
I mean, that's a cake, but although
chocolate mousse pie.
Yeah, that would be good.
Maybe I should do that. That'd be a great surprise.
Yeah.
Although I didn't make any pie in celebration.
Yet.
I did celebrate my grandmother's 100th birthday yesterday. Now, she hasn't been with us for 20 years, but it was her 100th birthday.
Nice.
And I had really big plans. And my grandmother is the one who taught me how to sew and all of the needle arts that she could get me to try. And she encouraged my drawing and bookmaking and anything hands-on. But my grandmother did not cook. Mm. I think I've told stories in the beginning of the podcast. She was really comfortable around the Pitzel iron. Mm-hmm. But she was not a baker. She did not like to cook. I mean, she had shelves of canned asparagus, if you're catching my drift.
I mean, you know, it was a time.
Right. And she once made my husband an entire tray of frozen fish sticks for a snack, which I just think is super charming. Yeah. So I didn't cook anything necessarily in her honor, but I did go to the fabric store and I bought, she loved yellow roses. She really loved Cosmos, but they're not really in the grocery store.
Oh, the flower, not the drink.
Yeah. She was not really a big drinker. I remember her occasionally having a wine cooler. She loved iced coffee, which is not my jam.
Interesting.
Uh-huh. She loved to swim, and I haven't made it out to the Pacific yet, but that's on my list this weekend. And I also need to plant some marigold seeds in her honor. You know, at the end of last night, felt like a little down because I was by myself and I was remembering her, and I put on Mary Poppins, the new one, because we watched the old one with her when we were little. She would have loved the new one, and it felt like just a great continuation to think of her the whole day. And as I was thinking about that, I realized that I should do this more often. And my grandma would have loved this podcast, even though she didn't cook and she would have loved audiobooks because she, I think, was slightly dyslexic and she had a hard time reading. But she definitely did something that she loved every single day.
Nice.
Regardless of her arthritis or her five handful sons, all four of my grandparents were hugely influential, but my grandma Helena was just incredible. Yeah, that's how I spent yesterday. And I hope that by sharing this, you will take a little time to honor someone that you miss or honor your own whim and do something that you love. And not just in the spirit of our podcast tagline, but for the sake of it.
Yeah. And I think you hit all of our segments there, on the needles, on the easel, on the table, and on the nightstand.
I try.
You always do an amazing job. So on the needles, activities first before we get to the actual knitting. I just wanted to let people know, in case you aren't a gnome fan, that there is going to be the spring gnome along with Imagine Landscapes starting up. I think it's April 1st. It might be the 18th, or maybe the 18th is the end. Anyway, it's soon. There is yarn kits that you can buy. There's one that she put together with a dyer, Woolens and Nosh, that because this gnome is going to be a self-striping gnome. Ooh.
Fancy.
So we're very excited. Fashion
gnome.
Exactly. So I'm pretty excited about that. And it's not like I don't have leftover self-striping because I have made a bajillion self-striping socks and there's always some left over. But they put together a kit and usually you get mini skeins. And what she did is she made one skein of yarn that has a self-striping and has like the beard and whatever other solid you need in one skein, which makes it easier for her to dye and to pack up and process and all of that stuff. So it's not hugely expensive. So it was a really reasonably priced. It's the amount of yarn that you need. I think the first run of that has sold out, but she's offering a second one, which might still be available, but is not guaranteed to arrive in time for the kickoff day. But you might still be able to get onto that. And I think there's going to be a lot of time after the final clue is released to actually enter, so you might be able to start late but still enter for fabulous prizes. Or if you just really want to try the yarn, you can do that too. And I think she said there was going to be other dyers that were participating as well, and they might not be doing exactly the same thing, but there will be other kits available. I'll put a link to that in the show notes to her website with all the information, because gnomes are really fun. So I'm looking forward to that little bit of joy in the spring. And then the really exciting news is tomorrow is the kickoff for the Bay Area Yarn Crawl. Woo-hoo. So this is the Bay Area Yarn Store's answer to there not being a Stitches anymore. Moment of silence. And then
I actually think it might serve them better. It's definitely a little more work for us, but I think it got really prohibitive cost-wise for some places to have a booth at Stitches, and that's kind of what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, it'll
certainly the smaller, like the individual dyers, I know it was getting really expensive. Like a store could probably do it, but at the same time, if you're a local person, you're not going to go to the Imagine It booth. I mean, you might, because you can always go to the store.
And I think staffing was really hard to
have both
maintain their staff in store and then to have another staff that is gone for those 5 days and so maybe
in transport and so we'll see. And a lot of them are doing trunk shows. I'm actually taking an indigo dyeing class, yarn dyeing class at A Verb for Keeping Warm tomorrow, which I'm very excited about. The trunk shows, there's a lot of great ones. My kid has a track meet on Saturday in the South Bay. I was very excited to go hit up a whole bunch of yarn stores down there while in between his races. Now he's only doing one race. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to convince him to come to some yarn stores with me. We'll see. I haven't told him that yet. Yeah, we have a big day planned next weekend. And
Monica has it planned.
Well, I haven't planned it yet, but I mean, East Bay. Yeah, we're doing the East Bay next Saturday.
I'm just trying to narrow down like one or two projects that I can shop for and not go bananas because, geez, I am so slow.
I don't know if you're slow. You just are focused on other things.
That's true.
You have other things going on. So I'll try and remember to post pictures on Instagram of all our adventures. And then our next episode will be our recap of how amazing and fun it was. Actual knitting. I've done no work on my Adventuresome wrap. I've been working away on the weather or not scarf. It's my keeping track of the weather. Yeah, and today's toasty. Or it's supposed to be toasty today. Although super windy. I don't know. So
warm and windy over the next few days.
Yeah.
In case people need a San Francisco weather report.
Of course they do. They were upset that we didn't do it at the beginning of the episode. It does definitely feel like we've been having warmer days in general. So I am excited to see my colors sort of consistently change and how that happens. I've been working away at my OMG heel socks in the Regia yarn with the self-patterning, and I have turned the heel on the second one, so I just have the foot to do. And as I said, track season has started, so I should have lots of knitting time, and that sock is just the perfect thing to take along. And then I am almost done with my Pop Socks by Hunter Hammerson. That is the test knit that I was doing last time in the Three Irish Girls Springvale sock in second star to the right, which is a, I guess, tonal aqua, light aqua. It's beautiful and it is working so well. Very excited. So for the test knit, this was a pattern that she, it was her first release pattern from March of 2009. So it's been, I forget what the anniversary is, something with a 15 years. I was not a math major. So she's going to she just re-released it. So it is, I think, available now. So she wanted us to test knit the pattern, but we only had to get through. So the pattern starts off with wavy lines and then ends up in a point, either right after your ankle or in the middle of your foot, or you can skip the point entirely. So she just wanted us to get through the point part, whatever length we wanted it. And I decided I was trying to get it to end up in the middle of my foot and not right at the ankle, mostly because the rest of the foot is 1x1 twisted rib. I did not want to do that for an entire sock's worth. So I thought having the patterning going for longer would be great. It ended up a little farther down than I would have liked, but it's fine. It's beautiful. No one looks at my actual feet anyway, generally. It's a really fun pattern. I super enjoyed it. It makes a lot of sense. It flows once you get the idea of the pattern and figure out what's going on. It just flows naturally and goes pretty quickly for all that there are increases and decreases and a lot of twisted stitches. It's just been really enjoyable. Because I've done so many just plain vanilla socks lately in the fun self-striping yarn, but they are just kind of background knitting. So this has been an actual pattern and I had kind of forgotten how fun that is because I do a lot of like just stockinette knitting because it is relaxing. But every once in a while, it's nice to have a little challenge.
Absolutely.
And it does make it go along quite quickly because you're like, ooh, let's just finish this part of this section. Oh, wait, let's just do one more.
It's like dopamine knitting.
It is entirely. But then I have started a new sweater. So I'm pretty excited about that. It is the Sun Salutation by Celia McAdams Cahill. So the pattern's not been released yet. It is our pattern for my Knockers retreat, my Northern California Knitters retreat, which is happening at the end of April. So I think that is when it will come out. And it is a revamp. That seems to be what I'm knitting these days, of an open cardigan that she designed several years ago. So it's really nice. It's very simple, lots of stockinette. And it's interesting. You knit the shoulders and like the top part of it in one tighter gauge, and then you switch needles to make it looser and more drapey for the rest of it.
Ooh, I like that idea.
Yeah, so I think it'll be really interesting. Very simple. I decided to make mine striped because I was looking through my yarns and I realized that it stitches, I want to say like 2018 maybe. I bought two skeins of Ms. Babs Yowza, one in slate, which is a medium gray, and then Temptress, which is a magenta and purple and gray and white, mostly magenta, variegated yarn. And I've had this plan to put them together in a big comfy sweater for many years now. And so I felt like this was the time to do it. So this pattern was released to all of the attendees at the retreat with the idea that people would want to knit it beforehand. And then we all get together and wear our sweaters. And it's very fun. We did this last year as well. It was really cool to see all of these sweaters. One pattern, so many different variations all at one time. So that was fun. And when I say I have started it, I have cast on and I think knit two rows. And then I realized it was going to be 2.5 inches of stockinette. I needed some TV and that was not going to happen anytime. So I switched back to working on my socks and then I haven't been home to watch TV since then. So I did at least get it cast on, because I do want to have it done by the end of April so I can take it to the retreat. I think it'll be good. It'll be nice to throw on over things because it gets cold at night.
At the retreat.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, in California in general, it usually cools off once the sun goes down. Unlike other parts of the world where you can sit outside, I hear, in the summer at night and not have a sweater on.
I don't mind.
I know. I mind a little bit. So that is my knitting. I hear you have some needles stuff to tell us.
I do. I was very, very excited to start my slinky, slinky, sly snake sweater. And I felt like it was mission critical for me to knit the swatch. I think I shared that I'm using a Miss Babs Katahdin.
Oh, Katahdin.
So it's a fingering weight. And then Malabrigo sock fingering weight. I thought that they were really, really close. And now that I've knit up a little swatch, I don't know, because I'm not, you know, I've never really done color work before. And I've also chosen a very difficult color work pattern, because even though it's only two colors, it has really long runs in between. And so I have become a how to catch your color work YouTube enthusiast. And so I'm looking at a lot of different techniques on how to do this properly, because I really don't like, I mean, there's some runs that are 23 stitches, and that's just, I feel like it needs to be like every three or four that you're catching a float.
I think five or six is the recommended.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you could do whatever you want, but.
Yeah. So it just feels like it would be, I need a strategy for this before I continue on. And then I had that other sweater, the Delft. It's like a Delft sweater. I'll put a link to it. It's a free pattern on Ravelry, because I did check the pattern again. That is also a two-color color work all over. It looks more like a Fair Isle pattern, sort of. I don't know what the exact definition of Fair Isle is. But it's like a smaller repeats. So not these big blocks of color like the snake sweater.
I think of the difference as being more the one where you have to wind up the yarn. It's not overall patterning. Like, if you're just can keep knitting in a circle and both of your yarns are going around all the times, that's
so one. It's like an all over pattern, the Delft one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas there's the ones where you have to, like, they're in blocks of colors and you have your yarn on the little butterfly thing.
More like intarsia.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one is all over pattern, two colors. And one of the instructors that I was watching about how to catch your floats was saying that it's actually easier to learn on a pattern like the Delft than it is on a pattern like the slinky snake one, because there are no floats to catch.
Yeah. And that does make the tensioning harder, I think, if you're trying to.
Which is what keeps happening with my swatch, is that it's already got a curvy snake on it. The fabric doesn't need to be curvy wavy, because that I do need some elasticity in my knits. And so I need to figure out that tension for sure, because I don't want it to be too small.
Yeah. Yeah. Because just in general, color work, I feel, has less give. So you really are going to have to figure out what gauge you're getting and how much.
So this is a learning moment for me, because I am definitely a dopamine knitter. Like, I want to try something new and challenge myself. But I suspect that maybe I might go back to the Coralia sweater and do the one technique in the yoke and have success making another sweater that fits. I feel like that's probably maybe a little safer, but greater chance of success.
I wonder if you could maybe try and make a hat with the snake pattern.
That's a great idea.
A small size, just do a couple repeats, get used to making it work. And then don't worry about patterning on the top, do the
snakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Or look at something similar, cuz I don't know if I want a snake hat.
Well, yeah. Or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, just something so you can
I'm excited to do some knitting and to go to the shops over the coming weeks and look at some stuff.
Yeah, I do need to figure out what I want to get out of what yarn I am looking for specifically.
Yeah, totally. My other needle stuff includes a tremendous amount of altering and sewing. So I have this bee in my bonnet about using all of the clothes in my closet. And of course, I know that I'm like every other person in the world where there are things in there, oh, that's not the most, that's not the best fit, or that needs mending, or, you know, most articles have like some little issue with them. I know how to fix a lot of that. And one of the huge things that I learned last year about pants, and I don't technically know what it's called, but it's how they fall from the waist down, how they fall on me. Pants kind of fall inward. You know what I mean? And all I have to do is like hike up not even a quarter of an inch on this back hip on each side, and then the pants hang straight. And that's really easy if you're crafting a pair from scratch, but it's also not that hard of a fix to do that to all of my ready to wear pants, and they fit perfect.
Oh, good.
So these little tweaks, I'm trying to just use all the clothes in my closet. I don't have a big collection of clothes, so this is very doable for me. It feels important to me because the garment industry, and I have talked about this a little bit, is such an environmental catastrophe that for me, for how I like to wear my clothes, it feels important to get as much use out of them as possible. And so that has been really fun. So every night, that was another thing I did last night in honor of my grandmother, is I sat and hemmed a pair of pants that weren't quite right. I re-hemmed them. I have a couple cardigans that I like, but I feel like I'm constantly, if I'm walking around town, I'm like holding them closed. So I just put like a little hook and eye on the front of the cardigan. You can't even see it.
So smart.
Or like a little snap just to keep it closed if I want. Oh my gosh. Makes them 100%. Well, they were pretty wearable before, but so much more enjoyable. Done. Easy. I have another piece that has, you know, some ready to wear stuff has like elastic reinforcement in the shoulder, and one is really scratchy. So I'm going to cover it with bias tape, seam binding, then it will be comfortable. Lots of little mends and alterations like that. And then I did a really crazy thing. Of course, I offered to re-cane a chair for a friend. So we got this set of four chairs over at the Oakland White Elephant Sale. And one of them, the seat, they were like a woven rush seagrass seat. And one of them was destroyed, like an animal had chewed through it. And they were really sturdy chairs. And I thought, this is one of my fatal thoughts. How hard can it be? It's like brioche. So we bought this set of four, and I told her, no problem, I can fix that. And I ordered seagrass rush off of Amazon for $17, and it came to my house in this big spool. And I thought, oh man, I'm going to have to do something with the other half of that. There's no way it's going to be enough, or it's going to be too much for this whole chair. And then I took the old seat off and looked at it and like figured it out and figured out how to weave the pattern of the seat, and spent several hours in chunks, like over, I don't know, 2 weeks, weaving the seat. It was not easy. It was very difficult to work with the seagrass, super prickly. It kind of hurt my hands. I had clamps on every side of it trying to maintain the tension. But I also felt like I'm practicing what I preach with the clothing. Why get rid of this chair when it can be done? It's not easy, but it makes me appreciate that chair a whole lot more. And it came out great. It's not perfect, but it will last her until she finds a set that really, really works for the space. And then when she passes it on, it will be perfectly fine for the next person. So it was kind of a huge undertaking. I'm super proud of myself for learning the absolute basic of this craft. There are people who do a beautiful job with it. Yeah, I did this crazy thing. Now, what I wish that I could tell you about the big project that I'm working on. I don't have permission to do that.
This is easels now.
This is easels. And I am, when I'm waiting to hear about feedback on my big project, that's when I would go down and work on some mending or work on the chair or like kind of keep my hands busy. And then I realized the other day, the time in between hearing from my client was like sort of spaced out. I need to figure out a new series for myself to be working on. The field guides are still fun to me and I want to pursue that, but I'm also working on like a creative oracle deck type thing with different animals and plants and objects and curiosities. And this is something that I read about in a book and I like where it's going. So hopefully I'll be able to share something, anything from the easel soon. But in the meantime, it's thankfully the seagrass is done and over with. But the needles are really fun.
Needles are always fun.
Totally.
On the table. So I listened to the Recipe with Kenji and Deb podcast, which is Deb Perlman of Smitten Kitchen and J. Kenji Lopez Alt. I think that's his full name. It's a very long name. He wrote The Food Lab, and I think his latest book is called The Walk. He's a chef as well. And so I guess they're buddies. So they're doing a podcast, and it's called The Recipe, and they take a recipe that I think they have both done. They try out each other's recipes, and then they talk about what they liked and didn't like and what they think is the perfect whatever for this recipe. So kind of like America's Test Kitchen.
Yeah,
I think he worked...
workshopping a yeah. recipe. This is awesome.
Yeah, so it's pretty fun. I think he worked there at America's Test Kitchen as well. So I listened to Meatloaf, that episode, and I think there's a mac and cheese one as well, which I have not yet listened to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it was pretty good. It was interesting because like his recipe for meatloaf was from, I think, the Food Lab. So Deb was, they were both kind of laughing about it because he kind of admitted he does not really cook like that anymore. I mean, it has something like 20 ingredients. This is absolutely not sort of a quintessential meatloaf because that's sort of leftovers and using things up. But he was being a little more scientific about it. And hers was the turkey meatloaf from Keepers, I think. So it was interesting. So they have a whole discussion about like meatloaf and the history and how they developed their recipes and then what they thought about each other's recipes. So it was cute. I enjoyed it. And I mean, I'm not really going to make a meatloaf in my household.
I might.
Yeah. So
I have incoming next week. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was good. I might, you know, if you like hearing people talk about food, that might be a fun one to check out. And I think they have links to their recipes as well. So that's helpful. And then I made a shallot and black pepper tofu stir fry from Allie Slagle. And she originally called for tempeh, but I had tofu. So that's what I used. Her theme for this recipe was sauces that have like two or three ingredients so that you're not making a whole sauce. You're just throwing some things in there. And it was surprisingly delicious. So this one, you cut up two shallots and stir fried them, or, you know, got them more or less caramelized them, but fairly quickly. It was not a whole 30 minute slow and low kind of thing. A whole bunch of vegetables, tofu, tempeh, whatever protein you wanted to use. And then throw some ginger, a whole bunch of black pepper in there, soy sauce, and then a splash of sherry vinegar. And that was it. Maybe some water. Super simple and really intense. Probably could... did I double the sauce? I might have doubled the sauce. So that could be part of it. But it was really good. And everybody liked it, which is always satisfying. And again, really, really easy. And you don't even really have to remember a recipe. You're just putting stuff in there. So that was nice. And then she had some other ideas for kind of similar sauces that I will probably circle back to because it was nice. And then last night I made a tofu shawarma dinner salad, which is a dinner love story recipe. So both of these get me the ability to check off my goals for March, which is very exciting, trying to use up my Substack subscriptions. I'm not sure. I think the tofu one might not be. The Allie Slagle one might be a paid recipe, but I'm not entirely sure. So her idea for the tofu shawarma was there was, I guess, a New York Times chicken shawarma recipe that Jen, my good friend Jen, loves and has done a lot. But, you know, she does not usually have meat during the week anymore. So she made it a tofu one and then created a whole big kind of Greek-like, I guess, Middle Eastern salad, lettuce and radishes and cucumber, bunch of dill, feta, and then a yogurt, honey, and za'atar dressing.
Yum.
Right?
fantastic.
It was great. And the tofu shawarma was delicious. You know, I haven't had a shawarma in a long time because they're usually meat. So we just don't. Or and there's the whole pita bread thing is so my household just doesn't usually go, even though we have a really great Middle Eastern place down the street from us.
I have all the ingredients for this. I'm totally making this for myself tonight.
The coating, the spices and oil and everything, it looked like too much, but it was delicious. It was excellent. Great. It takes about 20 minutes to bake, which is not long at all. Yeah. And then she says it's enough for 2 or 3 large servings or 4 small ones. And we ended up, we had salad left, but my husband went and finished off the tofu as he was cleaning up the kitchen. So he was very, very fond of it. And I like the dressing a lot. I think we have some dressing left too. And that's my food.
I'm totally going to make that tonight. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. And I mean, I think obviously you could use the, not the dressing, the spice mix.
The marinade.
The marinade, yeah. Mm-hmm. On chicken as well, or a combo, you know, tofu and chicken, depending on your household.
Well, I'm solo and I have tofu, so I'm going for it.
Yeah. And I bet it would be really nice the next day too.
Mm. Excellent. Well, we have had a combination of travels and solo or just two of us in the house. So I haven't really been cooking all that much. I did make another batch of that chicken marsala, thinking that it would serve me and Matthew for a couple nights, and he devoured it in one night. So there, again, the no leftover problem. Last night, I didn't make anything in honor of my grandmother, although she loved having a cookout, like a barbecue. So I did make us some chicken burgers, which is far more than she would have done. Like, she would have just done hamburgers and hot dogs. But I made us some chicken burgers, and I put some tater tots in the oven in honor of her love of frozen food. None of this counts as cooking, really. But that turkey, or the chicken burger, is pretty solid. So I might put that link in. Otherwise, I fear that I am suffering from a real cooking rut because my household is in a real state of flux. We have a lot going on. We have people traveling. We have people off at school. We have people just, it is mostly just me around. While I'm good about my temple lunches and making myself a nice lunch, by the end of the day, I don't want to make a whole nother meal for myself. And so I am having to do a little bit of, okay, what's this? It's kind of good that it's happening now and not in the fall when both boys are off at college. So to combat this, I have ordered a bunch of cookbooks. And kind of depressingly, they're like cooking for two or cooking solo cooking. Cue the tears.
I used to have a bunch of those.
I feel like I've always been cooking vast quantities. So I'm not sure how I'm gonna, I guess how I was trying to solve this problem was, what if somebody had come to me and said, it's just me, what do I do? And aside from shopping at Trader Joe's, which is definitely an option, you know, because it's more portion sized and a little easier, I do want to have some recipes just for me, things that I love that I reach for when it is just me. It's not always, that's for sure. But this is definitely a stretch of 2 weeks when 80% of the time it's just me at dinner. Totally. So that's where I'm at. And I think what I'll do is, instead of sharing recipes, is share some of the cookbooks in the notes. Mm-hmm. I'm picking them up, you know, over the next few days. I ordered them from the library and we'll see if any of them are helpful.
Cool. Yeah, I can see where it would be nice, like if you have one night to yourself to just be like, okay, I'm just going to have an egg or, you know, something. Right. But multiple times, you need a plan.
4 or 5 nights in a row is.
Yeah.
Yes, a rotisserie chicken is easy, but.
Yeah, you got to do something with it. You can't just, I mean, right. I can just pull bits off.
But I do enjoy cooking and I just want to have, I feel like I need a couple or three go-to recipes for when it's just me. And then it can be something that I really look forward to. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's, I'm kind of struggling with that and I thought I would share it.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
On the nightstand. So you know how I like having my little themes. I had told Courtney about this one. It's not an actual theme. I did not plan this. I mean, I never plan my themes. They just seem to happen spontaneously. The first three books that I read for this episode, the titles all started with the word one. I didn't realize it until I got to the third one and I was writing up my notes. I was like, hey, look what I did. So strange. So we have One Woman Show, One Dark Window, and One Day. I thought it was hilarious. I feel like I should get to be able to check something off for one of my reading challenges, I don't think it is.
I have like about 15 books so far from the beginning of the year. And when I wrote them all down, they all but one start with the, you know, the so-and-so, the. And that's not as uncommon, but it did. I was kind of getting annoyed with myself for a little bit. Like, pick a different book.
So the books. One Woman Show by Christine Colson. This was super fun. Very short. You could read it in one sitting, I think. Christine was a writer for the Metropolitan Museum of Art for years. So one of her jobs was writing all the little descriptions that hang next to the artworks. You know, to tell you who the artist was and the history and what to look for and those things. And I guess there are a lot of rules about them. I think they can only be 40 words or something. I don't know where I got that number from. I might be making that up, but there are rules. And so she had the idea of writing a novel using this format. So every page is its own little description. This is why you can get through it very quickly. And it is the story of Carolyn Margaret Brooks Whitaker, also known as Kitty. She is born in 1906. She's a Park Avenue princess. And it's just the story of her life. And every page is a description of her at a moment. And it's described kind of like a painting. And it goes through her whole life. And as you might surmise, since she is living in the 20th century, she goes through a lot. And we get the kind of the history of not exactly the women's movement, but views of women. You also get descriptions of her husbands and her parents and her friends and in this same artistic, descriptive way. So I really liked it. It was interesting. I don't know that the story itself is anything fantastic, but the way it's framed really made you think about how women are portrayed and viewed in society and how it changed and how Kitty kind of comes into her own and finds her own path forward. You know, I don't know that I'd want to see a series of books or it's really kind of a one-off. But I did like it. It was interesting, little quick read. So I would recommend that one. And then One Dark Window by Rachel Gillig. I would classify this in the romanticy. More the fantasy of than the romance. The romance part is pretty light and honestly could have just entirely been left out, but whatever. So it's the story of Elspeth. She lives in a land where magic has all been concentrated into the hands of the elite through these providence cards. Other people occasionally get an infection and are left, once the fever subsides, with magic and madness and are banished off the path into the forest and the evil magical mist. She got the infection, but as far as anybody knows, was not left with magic. So her family has sort of continued to hide her. She stays away from court, just lives a kind of a quiet life. What nobody knows is that she has a monster living in her brain now. Dark and...
it's relatable.
Kind of hairy and clicky claws. But he does, if she calls on him for help, will help her out of sticky situations. Mm-hmm. But that increases his power.
Oh.
Problematic. She's walking home from town one night, comes across some highwaymen. Shenanigans ensue, basically. The adventures start to happen. They are trying to fulfill a legend, myth, prophecy. If you collect one of each of the providence cards, you can restore magic, proper magic, to the land and drive out the evil mist. And they want her help. It is unfortunately the first book of two, so I am waiting for book two from the library. It is at least out. I didn't have to wait for it to become available. I liked it. You know, I like the story is good. I like the characters. Elspeth is interesting in her balance between her weak and her strong points. It's not the most perfect example of the genre, I would say, but I did definitely enjoy it, and I did definitely want to have the second book with me immediately upon finishing the first one. So I feel like that's a pretty good recommendation, and I am interested to see what they do with it in book two. And hopefully there it is only book two. If I have to wait for a third one, I'm going to be a little cranky. Not that I don't have plenty of other books to read. Then the final one, One Day by David Nichols. Yes, the one that the Netflix series is based on. And I kind of can't believe that I hadn't read this before. It does seem right up my alley. And also, I know why I didn't. It was okay. So it is the story of Dex and Emma. They see each other around at university, but don't officially meet until a graduation party on July 15th, 1988. And the book picks up with them on that date every year. And that's the only time you pop in and see them. They become friends, and you just get like 20 years of their relationship. And this is one of those, and I totally understand why people love it. I did actually cry some tears at the end. But it is one of those very sentimental books, possibly overly sentimental. So not my favorite kind of genre, but I did like, I mean, I like the concept of popping in on them on one day and just seeing the changes and what happens and how their relationship developed and grew and changed. Although I never really did understand why they were friends, 'cause they just seemed so different.
Have you seen any of the Netflix?
I started watching the first episode and they still just annoyed me and I didn't understand it. So
it was on in the background when I was fighting with some project. I have tapped out and so was so surprised to see it on your book list because I wondered if you'd had a different experience having read it, and it appears not.
No. So you haven't read it.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. I guess I had heard the reviews, well, first of all, like Netflix was promoting it as a rom-com, which everyone who has read it was like, no, that's completely wrong. So it is not a rom-com. I mean, there's romance and there's comedy, but that is really not the kind of book that it is, or the series. Yeah. And I suspected that it was going to be a little mushy for me.
And it does not fit the definition of romance.
Oh, it's definitely not a romance.
Yeah.
100% not. Okay. So that's all my one books. But then another one that I read, Half a Soul. So apparently it's all just numbers. Well, not entirely. So this wasn't as another, I guess we could call it a romantasy, but I don't think so. I think it is a fantasy romance. And I'm going to separate them because this one is definitely a romance. Do we need to talk about what a romance actually is?
I think you can tell people. It's been a while.
Yeah. So an actual romance that needs to be focused on the couple and they need to have a happily ever after at the end. And that is it. That is the important thing, though. So things like Outlander and Sarah J. Maas universe and Fourth Wing do not count because they don't. I mean, maybe the first Outlander book, you could kind of, they sort of are happy. But the other eight books, definitely not. And this Fourth Wing, no. So I will give romanticy as a like smush up. It's like fantasy with hot shenanigans, right? It's not a romance. So there's that. So this one is definitely a romance with fantasy elements. It takes place in Regency, England, which is delightful. It was really sweet. So Dora, when she's about 9, is cursed by a fairy. These are the evil kind of fairies, not cute little Tinkerbell fairies. And so she grows up a little strange. She is prone to saying what's on her mind and doing things that she feels like doing, which if you're a lady in Regency, England, does not go over well. But she grows up with her cousin, who is perfect and beautiful, and they are still friends. Actually, her cousin is the one that kind of saved her from the fairy. It's time to go to London for the season so the cousin can find a wife, and she insists on bringing her cousin Dora with her, and her secret plan is to take Dora to meet the Lord Sorcier, who is the court magician, head court magician for the prince, because hopefully he'll be able to find a way to fix her, save her, figure out what's wrong with her. Dora ends up running into the Lord Sorcier, Elias Wilder, in a bookstore, and shenanigans ensue.
In a bookstore?
Well, I mean, no, not in the bookstore. This one was actually...
All those years that you use shenanigans.
No, I'm changing the definition. You can tell from the context what I mean. No, this one was pretty... It was, I don't even think there was anything going on. Very Regency England. She's a good girl.
Proper.
Very, yeah. But it was really nice. There's some politics and saving the world and romance for the cousin. There is a series, but they're all separate. You don't have to read them in order kind of things. I think the characters overlap and whatnot. So I really enjoyed this one. It was very sweet. Easy to read. Just a nice little romance with some fairies and, you know, doing good in the world. And then finally, No Numbers, Kids Run the Show by Delphine de Vigeon, translated by Allison Anderson from the French. This one is pretty recent, came out in the past couple of months. It is the story of Melanie, who is a parent influencer on Instagram, or I guess with her kids. And her daughter is kidnapped. And then Clara is the policewoman who is investigating or part of the investigative team. And it kind of flips back and forth between their two stories. And I do want to say this is not a thriller book. The kid is fine. No problems. It is not that kind of book. It is not about that. It is about the relationship between the two women. It is about the relationship between technology and people that use their kids and their influencer lifestyle. It starts off early 2000s and I think goes all the way to 2030. It was very French. I liked it. It was more a thought-provoking book. And I think a lot of what she did went to the service of making you think about technology and kids and the influencer life and less about the story itself. But I really liked Clara the policeman, and it had a satisfying ending, so I enjoyed it. I'm glad I read that one. What books do you have?
I just have two books for you. The first one is called One of the Good Guys.
No way!
Yeah, way.
I love how you saved that for me.
You're welcome. This is by Araminta Hall, and this is a psychological thriller. Mm-hmm. It is chiefly through the perspective of Cole, who is coming out of like a 7-year marriage. He and his wife have decided to split, and he explains it like they had all of these issues with fertility, and you can tell he's kind of casting blame on her a little bit, like her job was so busy, she really wasn't into it. And so he has removed himself to a remote spot on the coast, on like the southern tip of England. And it's part of that path that people walk. You know how that coastal path, like over the Dover Cliffs type thing? Also going on is this pair of young women who are, they're doing a walk along that same cliff walk to raise money and awareness for violence against women. And so that's happening. And then we start to get the online chatter about the publicity that the girls get and just the vitriol that some people have the audacity to post online, you know, in contrast or woven into the story of how Cole is trying to process the end of his marriage and how he feels misunderstood. And without giving anything away, because this has an embroiled plot with a million twists and turns that I particularly didn't see coming at all. I don't know in the end. I mean, you think you're going to have a certain sympathy when you're reading this book. And in the end, it's sort of tilted. Like you're really left scratching your head. Nothing is as it seems. He's not nobody's particularly likable. this is going to be difficult for people who have had maybe fertility struggles or domestic violence issues, or that is bothersome to read. And the IVF stuff is also, it's descriptive and it's also pertinent to what is going on in our own country. So tricky. But it's a psychological thriller. So know that going into it. And then lastly, I read The Women by Kristen Hanna.
Oh, wow. That just came out.
Right. As soon as it was available at the library, I signed up for my copy to come through. Wow. This needs to be on your list. This was extraordinary. It is a very well-researched Vietnam era, so 1965 onward, story about Frankie, she grows up in a Navy area. She grows up on Coronado Island, just outside of San Diego. And her father is a businessman, but he just worships the Navy. And her brother goes off to Vietnam, and she decides that she tries to enlist as a nurse. She's just finished nursing school. The Navy doesn't take, they require 2 years of training, but the Army will take you. And so she enlists with the Army. And this, from there on out, everything that she thought about her family and being a patriot and nursing, everything is upended. And off she goes to Vietnam, and she serves as a nurse, a field nurse, and it is unflinching in this perspective. And you cannot look away, and it is so important. It's such an interesting perspective that I don't think has really been covered. Women going to Vietnam, when she comes back, everyone says to her, there were no women in Vietnam. Like, it's a totally underlooked. There's only 6 women on the Vietnam wall in DC, and they were all field nurses. So it is like a totally underrepresented story. And this is just incredibly moving. And the Vietnam stuff is horrifying. And her return home is equally eye-opening. It's a page-turner, beautifully written. My friend Kelly just finished it, and she said, magnificent, 5 stars, 2 thumbs up, all of the accolades. And I think you'll enjoy it. So that's The Women by Kristen Hanna.
All right. I think that will do it for us this time. Next time, we will have our Bay Area Yarn Crawl episode. We haven't quite figured out. I don't know. Maybe we should do it backwards again. That's always fun.
Sure.
We don't have the recording cave, which is sad. But we will have lots of shenanigans to report on. Not those kind of shenanigans.
generic shenanigans.
Generic shenanigans. So until next time, make sure to do something you love every day.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Show notes can be found at craftcookreadrepeat.podbean.com. You can find us on Instagram as craftcookreadrepeat or CourtneySF, that's CourtneySF. On Ravelry, I'm Magdon, MAGDON. And if you have any questions or comments, email us at craftcookreadrepeat@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.